Blog Talk Radio.
Families have gathered around bountiful tables for generations, giving thanks for blessings seen and unseen. In the United States, that same scene played out in the early 1600s when the native-born American Indians helped to save an entire community of immigrants of English settlers from starving as they began their new life in America. The native-born and the foreign-born immigrants banded together for that brief period to eat and give thanks for the harvest of crops. In that spirit, we dedicate this show to the native-born and the immigrants and the thankfulness we share on this Thanksgiving Day, November 25th, 2010. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. This is a live broadcast that you won't want to miss. Well, we welcome each and every one of you to this show. I thought that I was going to be in West Hartford, Connecticut, doing this program at my daughter and son-in-law's house, but the traffic was so bad on I-90 going westbound that I had to get off at a rest area. Little did I realize that there are literally hundreds and thousands of people who are just passing through the doors of all nationalities who are going somewhere. They're going to their relatives' houses, their family and their friends' houses, getting ready for that wonderful, scrumptious dinner that they're going to enjoy for Thanksgiving. We hope that you are also going to enjoy your dinner, and we hope that you're enjoying yourself, whether you're listening to this broadcast live or whether you're listening to it as a download. We have lots of fun activities, and I'm going to have my relatives to call in very shortly and have a big shout-out. We're going to talk about family get-togethers and food and festivities later on in the show. I'm also hoping that some travelers that I have talked to here in the rest area are going to come over and say hello to us in the next couple of minutes. So this is going to be a pretty interesting show. We're broadcasting, again, live here on Interstate 90 in Massachusetts, not that far from the Connecticut border. And we will certainly have a really good show in store for you. I'm also going to play some highlights of audio clips from the Immigrants Conference that took place, the Immigrants Conference on Entrepreneurship that took place now almost 2 weeks ago that the Immigrant Learning Center put on. We actually talked about it last week. And in the spirit of Thanksgiving, when we talk about those native-born, and that was really the Native American community that taught the pilgrims how to fish and how to farm and how to survive that very first, very harsh winter that cost many people their lives, but then those who survived learned how to function with that. Would you like to say hello? Just one, say hello on the air? We have one traveler who's here. She's going to tell us who she is and where she's going, and happy Thanksgiving.
This is Lindsay. I'm headed to Williamstown, Massachusetts. Just want to say happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Okay. Thank you, Lindsay. Thanks so much. And you are?
Zoe Nemeth.
And where are you going?
Oh, I'm going to Williamstown, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Okay. Thank you. Safe travels to you. All righty. Take care now. And we have another family over here. I'm not sure if they want to say hello, say happy Thanksgiving. I'm going to walk over to them, and they're going to say happy Thanksgiving. Hello.
Hi. Hello. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right. And where are you going?
We are going to Syracuse, New York.
Yep. Tell us who you are.
We are from Boston.
From Boston. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. Happy traveling to all of you. All right. We've got lots of people here, and they were nice enough to come on over and bring greetings, and we say thank you for all those who are traveling, and we hope everyone will have safe travels to and from wherever they happen to be going. What I want to do now is I want to, first of all, just sort of paint the picture for Thanksgiving. Again, Thanksgiving is no stranger to the United States. Actually, there are versions of Thanksgiving that take place all over the world, not just the United States. The second Monday in October in Canada is the observation of Thanksgiving in that country. And in other countries, some version of Thanksgiving also takes place. It's just a way to say thanks and thank you for being alive, being born, and certainly being able to gather at a table with family and friends and enjoy a good meal, as they did in the early 1600s and with Plymouth Rock and with the Virginia colony. They did the very same thing. But the whole spirit of Thanksgiving is one that's very meaningful and very important in the United States, whether you're watching football games. When we left this morning, in my community, a football game was taking place, and it's pretty traditional across the country where the high school teams get together and play their rival teams for the great football shootout for that particular season. And many times it's the last game of the season for a lot of the high school teams. So it's an exciting time. So as we look back historically, we look to what's going on here. Again, I am in the area, in the rest area here in I-90 with lots of immigrants who are here, lots of people who are traveling, people going home to visit their relatives, cousins, aunts and uncles, and that's what the spirit is all about. I want to play an interview now that's about 3 or 4 minutes long. And this is Diane Portnoy. She is the co-founder of the Immigrant Learning Center in the Malden, Massachusetts area, a remarkable woman. And I think you'll just resonate with her story and the passion that comes through with each and every activity that she is involved in. She actually was the host of the Immigrant Conference that took place 2 weeks ago. A remarkable woman. She is the her parents were Holocaust survivors from Poland, and as you'll hear about their journey to the United States. So without further ado, Diane Portnoy's interview that we did 2 weeks ago at the Immigrant Entrepreneurship Conference.
I'm now talking to the visionary leader behind this wonderful immigration conference. I've had fun telling my friends on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn about this, and now I can talk to you, Diane Portnoy, about this wonderful event. Tell me about your vision and why this conference made so much sense to the Immigration Learning Center.
Okay, well, the Immigrant Learning Center is a not-for-profit adult learning center that provides free English classes to immigrant and refugee adults. After 9/11, anti-immigrant sentiment and rhetoric increased dramatically based on so much misinformation and stereotypes. And that's when the board decided that we would expand the mission to also promote immigrants as assets. And of course, we have initiated a number of programs as part of that. One of them is the commissioning of business sector research studies. And these studies look at immigrants as entrepreneurs, workers, and consumers in various business sectors here in Massachusetts. And we found what all other research has found is that immigrants are entrepreneurs. And as entrepreneurs, they revitalize communities, they create jobs, they generate billions in revenue, and they're vital for economic growth. So a symposium to share this kind of information and develop recommendations on how communities can welcome these entrepreneurs was a natural next step.
And where are you going to take this conference, and where are you going to take the Immigrant Learning Center in the future?
Okay, well, we'll continue with the core program, providing free English classes. But I think the public education program, we will expand. My vision, my dream, is to take this national. Again, with all the work we've done, in some ways, the rhetoric today is worse than ever. And so we're doing a strategic plan. There are a number of things that we hope we can initiate to impact the people at large, so people will understand that immigrants are actually good for them. They're good for your neighbors. They're not hurting you. They're not taking anything away from you. My vision is to somehow create some sort of national program to get this message across.
My son-in-law is an immigrant. What is your personal connection to the work that you're doing and this wonderful organization?
Well, Karen, my parents were Polish Jews who survived the Holocaust. I was actually born a year after the war ended. And when I was 3 and a half, we immigrated to the United States. on a converted battleship, you know, through Ellis Island. We had nothing. We spoke no English. My parents had lost their whole family. So growing up with my parents in that kind of environment, I understood the issues that immigrants face. I actually grew up in a community made up totally of immigrants, Holocaust survivors. Many didn't speak English. So it's very much a part of my personal experience. Every time I walk to the school, I see my mother and father. It hasn't changed. It doesn't matter if they're from Iran or Iraq or China or Brazil, all over the world. It's the same.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol.
That was Diane Portnoy. She is the co-founder of the Immigrant Learning Center in Malden, Massachusetts, a remarkable visionary woman who has built up this organization to be a powerhouse, not only in this state, but certainly it's going to spread beyond the state borders very shortly with the public education program. She had a fabulous conference, and we're going to have three other interviews that are going to play throughout this segment. As we look at the immigrants in the United States, their contributions, we think about what happened 400-plus years ago when the immigrants were the English, and they were literally saved from utter starvation and death and destruction by the Native Americans who were the native-born. And speaking of that, I have some information I want to share with you when you look at these terms that I'm using. These are terms that are actually used by the federal government. And this segment says, defining nativity status, who is foreign-born. Nativity status refers to whether a person is native or foreign-born, and the native-born population includes anyone who was a U.S. citizen at birth. Residents who were born in the United States, Puerto Rico, a U.S. island area, including the U.S. Virgin Islands, Guam, America, Samoa, and the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, or abroad of a U.S. citizen parent or parents are defined as native. The foreign-born population includes anyone who was not a U.S. citizen at birth, including those who have become U.S. citizens through naturalization. So that explains why I'm using this language in terms of foreign-born and native-born. That is the language that is used with the U.S. Census Bureau, Immigration, and all of our federal agencies. Again, I have a series I'm going to begin that will look at the numbers, the immigration, the contributions of immigrants in this country, and just want to set the record straight. And there's a report that I'm looking at right now. And in 2009, there were 307 million people in the United States, including 38.5 million foreign-born, representing about 1 in 8 residents. What country do you think do we get most of our wonderful foreign-born citizens, or foreign-born residents of the United States? I'll give you that answer in a few minutes. Just want to know what country represents the largest of all of the, they call it country of birth groups. What country do you think that is? And if you're listening live, you certainly can call in and give the answer on the air at 646-727-2766, 646-727-2766, or you can always send me an email at tellcarol, T-E-L-L-C-A-R-O-L-E, at mac.com. We'll give you that answer. My daughter is sitting across from me. She's waving, so she'll make sure we give that answer out very shortly. But I want to read a letter from President Barack Obama about Thanksgiving. He's sharing his good thanks and well wishes to others. And this is a letter that I received in my inbox today. It says, Carol, when Michelle and I sit down with our family to give thanks today, I want you to know that we're especially grateful for folks like you. Everything we have been able to accomplish in the last 2 years was possible because you were willing to work for it and organize for it. And every time we face a setback or when a progress doesn't happen as quickly as we would like, we know that you'll be right there with us, ready to fight another day. So I want to thank you for everything. I also hope that you'll join me in taking a moment to remember that the freedoms and security we enjoy as Americans are protected by the brave men and women of the United States Armed Forces. These patriots are willing to lay down their lives in our defense, and each of us owes them and their families a debt of gratitude. Have a wonderful day, and God bless President Barack Obama. So even our president sends me and sends all of us greetings on this wonderful Thanksgiving Day. It's pretty brisk outside. It's probably in the high 30s, low 40s. Wind chill factor is kicking up there, but again, we're at the rest area. My daughter and I traveling to Connecticut, stopping for a bit to do this radio program, and there are tons of people in here just coming in and out. And again, when I think about those who were born in another country, they are represented here in this rest area. There are lots of people who are here from different countries, and that's what makes our country great, and that's why it's such an exciting place to be. Would like to now play another radio clip from the conference that was held 2 weeks ago. This was an interesting conference because it's focused on entrepreneurial issues. It's focused on the entrepreneurial community, those people who come from different lands, and they come and they want to start over, they want to start their lives anew, and they open up their own businesses. They take the risk and they do that. And for many of us, as we go and get gas in our cars, as we stop in these convenience stores, many of them are owned and operated by immigrants. And we want to play a clip from Allison Maranta, and she is with the Jamaica Plain Neighborhood Development Corporation, representing in large part the Latino community. There are many Latinos in the greater Boston area and certainly in Jamaica Plain. And you'll have a chance to get a sense of some of the issues that they face. It's not always a bed of roses for those who open businesses, especially in this community in terms of safety factors. Trying to get a loan can be quite difficult. And she actually explains the difficulties that many of the foreign-born or the immigrants have when they're trying to operate their businesses. Trying to get a business loan can be extremely difficult. Cash flow can be difficult for all of us, and certainly if you are in the immigrant community, it can be especially difficult with the language issue. Let me see if I can just cut the sound down just a little bit. Just hold on 1 second, and we did that. And then we're going to play the interview from Allison Maranta, and again, she is with the Jamaica Plain Neighborhood Development Corporation, talking about that community, but you can take her words and look at your community and judge accordingly. Allison, take it away.
As I mentioned before, language is a real challenge. I'm looking at my merchants, how isolated they feel. They cannot speak within all the officials. They feel intimidated when they need to go to a bank. So it's a language that's a big issue for us. And it's across the board. Everywhere in the United States is not only a representation of Jamaica Plain. The culture, we assume the same has to be done our way, the same way we learn in our country. So regulations in our countries are more flexible. So what we see happening here in the United States, and the fact that the regulations are nowhere connected. So, you know, just go to San Clemente and get that feeling. Try to open a business going to San Clemente. Good luck. Poor and non-existing credit history. Part of my work is to help businesses to access financing. I recognize that bankers look at business credit history as an indicator of how this business owner would perform. And the reality is that we have a credit score around 680, which is considered acceptable. And our business is immigrant business owner, they have probably below 500, around low 600. So the reality is that they do not fit this requirement. And the fact that they have learned to operate cash-only businesses need more time to establish their own credit and to establish the business credit. Consider a business loan to those entrepreneurs who have a strong collateral. I don't even have a strong collateral. So, Yeah. You have to have it personal. You have to have a real estate equipment that has a strong value. If you are looking for $20,000, you know, believe me, you need your uncle, your grandfather to collaborate. You need a co-signer. So they don't have anybody who has this condition. Cash flow. We have 2 years in terms of crisis. So right now, what I see that my businesses have is an F, a D, a C to present to a bank. It's really, really, really hard to present a business with strong profit margin. And cash flow, how the banker would evaluate the cash flow is that they will look into a 1.25 debt service ratio. 1.25. I don't know who invented that number, but I think it's inappropriate with today's economic environment to request a business with obtaining $500,000 in loan to prove that they can pay in a whole year, one time and a quarter, their monthly payment. It's just so relevant. So we need to see changes in that.
Well, that was Allison Maranto with the Jamaica Plain Neighborhood Development Corporation just talking about some of the difficulties that her entrepreneurs, her small business owners have trying to operate a business, trying to get a bank loan can be quite difficult, the language barriers that are there, the variance in terms of the credit report. You have standards, obviously, with banks have standards in terms of how much they loan. You know, there's an old joke says that if you have money, you can go to a bank and get money. But if you don't have any money, that's probably the worst time to try to go to get a bank loan for a lot of reasons. But certainly credit scores are very important, and for many of the immigrants' population, their credit scores may not be so great, and so it makes it even more difficult to get that bank loan. So comprehension issues, language issues, just the whole cultural piece, can be enormous obstacles, yet they persevere anyway. They go on anyway, and that's the remarkable thing. Now, I'm looking at my nails, and I go to a nail shop in my community that's owned and operated by a Vietnamese family. It's a woman, a divorcee. She and her husband own the business, and now they've divorced because she has kept on the business. Her daughter is working there with her, other relatives and some other employees. And I don't care where you go in the United States, I'm sure that there is a Vietnamese nail shop that is an operation. And they put in long hours, 6 to 7 days a week. They work 12, 13 hours a day. It's quite a grueling business, and they do it for their families. They do it so that they'll make a better life, just like people have done throughout the generations who have come to the United States and elsewhere. There's another business that is also very popular in the Vietnamese community, and that is the refinishing business. If you live in the, certainly on the East Coast and many parts of the United States, hardwood floors are valued quite highly in terms of appreciating the value of your home. And so often carpeting is ripped up and the floors have to be refinished, or if the floors have sort of whatever worn down and they have to be refinished. Well, that is a budding business now for people in the Vietnamese community. So the nail salons and the hardwood refinishing business are two big ones in the Vietnamese communities across the United States. We have a strong Vietnamese population here in the greater Boston area, and attorney Long Nguyen also spoke at the same conference, and we have his remarks that we'd like to play also so you can get, again, a sense of the issues that are facing the Vietnamese community. He represents VS Aid. This is attorney Long Nguyen.
Vietnamese entrepreneurs in Pyeongchang in Massachusetts. And I just want to give some sort of a micro overview of what we have seen in the past 10 years. And I have been working in the Pyeongchang and in the Vietnamese community for the past 20 years, and I said before we go to that, we always say that immigrant entrepreneurs, they don't do business planning. After 20 years, I have to say that they do business planning much better than we do. I have lunch with a Vietnamese entrepreneur just last week, And he didn't even have a high school education. So, and you know, he paid for my lunch because he felt sorry. and he did say this to me. It's like, yeah, I don't even have a high school education and you have a law degree. And look at it, you know, I ran four successful businesses. I supported my family in Vietnam and in the U.S., five children, four wives. And look at it, you can't even support yourself. So that plays a lot. And really, they know, they might not know the sort of like the broader market, like the Dorchester market or the city of Boston market, but they understand their market, the immigrant market, very well. They understand what that market needs and what products are really competitive in that market. So that's what they know, and that's what they do very well. And for all of the Vietnamese and I think immigrant entrepreneurs, their competitive strategy is really based on two things. One is it's all based on pricing. They think they can provide a product at a cheaper price, and no one can compete back against that. And the second thing is really their formula to success is really working hard. I mean, I know so many of them who work 365 days a year, 10 to 15 hours a day. Who can compete against that? So that's their formula and that's their competitive strategy. And so in terms of business planning, I think they do it much better than we do. Maybe they do it in a Vietnamese way, not in a mainstream way. And just some background on the Vietnamese sort of a community. Paul has already mentioned how many Vietnamese businesses are there in the Fields Corner area or in the Dorchester area. I just want to add a few more things. For the Vietnamese community in Massachusetts, in addition to the neighborhood-based or ethnic specialty businesses, a lot of them are also employed or self-employed in the nail salon sector and also in the hardwood floor refinishing. So for example, like over 4,000 young Vietnamese women are self-employed in the nail salon sector in Massachusetts. I mean, it's just incredible. And again, you know, for them, self-employment is a strategy. When they compare sort of like which is the most effective and successful way to escape poverty, renew their lives, and do a better life for the future of their children, they look at self-employment and they look at traditional employment. Traditional employment, working at McDonald's 8 hours an hour. Self-employment, maybe they have to put in like 15 hours a day, but self-employment to them is always the most successful way to escape poverty and especially to live a better life for the children. So that's what, you know, in terms of their thinking, that's what it is. Again, they look at it, the community, they understand the needs of the community, they understand the market very well. But their market is also very small, extremely small. You know, for the ethnic specialty stores in Dorchester, in Fields Corner, their market is the Vietnamese community. Small. So as more and more businesses are open in the same area, restaurant, nail salon, whatever. So it becomes highly competitive. And therefore, they resort to working more hours and charging lower prices. And therefore, eventually, over time, their businesses become really not sustainable. You know, I mean, look at nail salon. Back then, they could charge like $60 to do like a set of nails or something like that. And now it's $10. You know, look at it. So, you know, that's the thing. And then that really helped inform, you know, what we can do in order to help them.
Well, that was Attorney Long Nguyen, and he represents VietAid, and was talking about the Vietnamese community in the greater Boston area. You can look at your own communities and probably come to the same conclusions. You probably have a nail shop somewhere in your community that is owned and operated by a Vietnamese family or a Vietnamese woman. And Long talks about the fact that there are 4,000 businesses owned by women starting their own businesses. They choose to be self-employed. I'm actually going to reach out to him and have him on my radio show. I'd like to have him on the radio show sometime in the future to give more information about this budding community and the issues, the opportunities that they face. But again, one thing that really struck me is that because there are so many Vietnamese nail shops, certainly in the greater Boston area, depending on what area you're in, You can be in an area and you can have three or four nail shops within a 3 or 4 block radius, and so that's going to obviously spike the competition and drive down the cost. So it's great for the consumers, but it means that many of those business owners have to work a lot longer just to make a good living wage for themselves. And, yeah, I've talked to some of them, and it's not a bed of roses, as I said earlier. They have issues. They have family issues just like the rest of us. They go through housing shortfalls and marital issues that they are struggling with. So when they come to this country, a lot of the societal issues are the same, regardless of what the ethnicity happens to be. And then the last interview I want to play, and we're going to give you the answer to the question we asked earlier about the country that represents the largest number of immigrant inflow into the United States. We'll give you that answer in a few minutes. I want to play another interview from someone I just greatly admire. I've had him he has now spoken twice for two of my events, one for my empowerment breakfast and then for the October 28th multicultural conference that we had at the University of Massachusetts. And this is Dr. Paul Watanabe. He is the director of the Asian American Institute at the University of Massachusetts and also a professor there, a leading scholar from a political point of view. He works with the Census Bureau, on major network programs broadcast around the United States, has an eagle eye as to the impact of our various ethnicities, our various groups, and the impact on politics and how politics is playing a factor in our lives, our way of our walk of life. Paul Watanabe is also the son of Japanese parents who were interned in Utah. And I'm egging him on. I'm hoping that he's going to write a book on that experience because that's where he spent part of his life, in Utah. And it's because of what happened after World War II, during World War II, when most of the Japanese Americans, regardless of how long they had been in the United States, were literally gathered up and taken to internment camps in the desert of Utah. And they stayed there for the duration of World War II. Their property was confiscated. They lost businesses. And it was sadly, it's a very sad part of our history. And as you all know, we were at war with Japan during that time, and for whatever reason, they thought they were a security threat. Now, interestingly, the Italian-Americans and the German-Americans were not put in internment camps. The Japanese-Americans were. That'll be another show altogether. But Paul Watanabe is, again, a leading expert and researcher from the University of Massachusetts, and we want to play his interview right now.
What do you see in terms of where we stand in terms of entrepreneurship in the Boston area or greater Boston area versus other parts of the country, Paul?
Yeah. Well, there's no question that Boston and Massachusetts are one of the real centers, the magnets for immigrants. I think it's pretty well known now that if we did not have immigrants coming to Massachusetts, our very limited growth would in fact be negative growth. They're the only real source in terms of the population as a whole. What that has meant is that this immigrant portion of our population is critical overall in terms of the workforce, but it's especially critical as well into a certain sector, and that is the entrepreneurial sector. And particularly where it is felt and seen most often, not necessarily the largest sector, but the place where we see it is in neighborhoods and in areas in Boston and in other areas where we see small corners, areas that sometimes had faced some economic challenges, which are being populated by smaller businesses, many of them very small, mom-and-pop operations, utilizing family members. But in some ways, they are providing a bit of the engine for some of these neighborhoods. And it's an important phenomenon to see. And it's across the board. We're seeing it. Not only a lot of attention is focused, for example, upon Latino immigrants, but we're seeing some of this reflected as well in immigrants that reflect from Africa or African diaspora communities. We see it, for example, from Asians, and we see it from some of the more traditional European immigrant communities as well. So it's an important, broad, and substantial phenomenon.
Very quickly, we hear an awful lot. You're a political expert,
right,
political
right.
research expert. We hear an awful lot from conservatives
yes.
trying to protect the small business
right.
Environment. Right. What's the impact of the conservative movement
yeah.
on immigrant communities, let's say, in areas like Greater Boston?
Well, here's where it's an excellent question, and here's where I think we've got to show some commonalities. As you point out, conservatives have been ones who have attempted to argue and support the idea of small businesses, and rather than having large federal outlays and so forth supporting urban areas. On the other hand, some of those same individuals have been opposed to trying to improve our immigration system. And what I've tried to make an argument is that if we look at those small businesses, which they like, they have to understand that many of these businesses rely on family members coming over, providing capital, providing employment, providing labor, and that they have to understand if they want to support that, which they do at a certain level, they, on the other hand, have to understand where the factors of production come from, family, capital, and to do that, they have got to support reasonable immigration reform and services for those immigrants. And what I've tried to say is you can't oppose one or you can't support one without understanding the linkage between the two of them.
And that, I'm sure, will be the next conference, the integration between those two sectors. Great.
I think that's one thing we've got to help in this political environment. We've got to make those kinds of arguments.
Right. Paul Watanabe, thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Carol.
All right.
Paul is such an insightful person. He got us going at the October 28th Multicultural Conference. This was literally a couple of days before the primary, the midterm elections, and asked some very provocative questions that really got us to think about what are the implications if the conservatives were to take over both houses of Congress, if the Democrats won both houses of Congress. We had a very spirit-filled conversation at the conference, in part because of Paul Watanabe and his insightfulness and the experience that he certainly brings to the table. So we've given you a little bit of highlights. We've sort of covered the landscape in terms of the immigrant entrepreneurs. Again, those, I never understand people who talk about undocumented, or they call them illegal aliens, and wanting to round them all up and deport them, which is physically and practically not going to happen. I look at this rest area that I'm in right now and the individuals who are working here on a holiday. I talk with one lady and ask her a question, and she doesn't speak English. And, so again, that reminded me about the value of the people who are here in this place keeping the lights on and sweeping the floors and cleaning up and serving the food. I look around this area. It's a little light now. The traffic has lightened up a bit. When I came in here earlier, it was just jam-packed with people, and I guess now people are traveling on now. But, again, just this rest area is the embodiment of America. The people who are here, old and young, black, white, brown, those born outside of the United States, those born in the country, it really is the embodiment, the picture of the United States and what our country is. It's more than a melting pot. It is a rather eclectic collection of people from around the country, around the world, who are here for a better life. They're here for education. They're here for medical reasons. They're here to start businesses, we've talked about. They're here to raise their families. And on this Thanksgiving, we're all here to give thanks. We've had a pretty active chat room. There are people who are just following the show, and we really appreciate those who are in the chat room, those who are getting ready to eat that turkey dinner. We have a friend here in the chat room. He doesn't have a question, but he's getting ready to take a nap before having that turkey dinner. We say happy Thanksgiving to you. Happy Thanksgiving to all who have stopped by the chat room. It's amazing. I love this show because it's so virtual, and you can be anywhere, any place, and either call in or you can dial in or certainly be in the chat room and hopefully be informed as well as being entertained. So that's really a great thing. those of you who were listening earlier, I had a little quiz question out there for you and wanted to know what country represents the largest of all, and this is according to the government, the largest of all of the country of birth groups. That's how they call it. Well, that country is Mexico. Mexico is the answer. And of the 38.5 million foreign-born representing 1.8 residents in the United States, Mexico is the largest country of origin, 29.8%. I'll go down the line in terms of this. And, again, you can get this information freely at census.gov. I'd like to have informed listeners. Census.gov. is the place where you can get lots of information, stats, data about the United States and those who are in our country for good. Mexico, China's number two with 5.2%, Philippines, 4.5%, India, 4.3%, El Salvador, I've been there and love the Salvadorian people, 3.0%, Vietnam, we just talked about that with Long Nguyen, 3%, Korea, 2.6%, Cuba, 2.6%, Canada, only 2.1% from Canada, Guatemala, 2.1%, the Dominican Republic, 2.1%, and then all other countries, which include African countries, those in Oceania, and those in Northern America, and islands and large and small countries alike, European countries, 38.8%. So that's a rundown of who is in this country and the countries that they represent. But certainly Latin America is strongly represented because Mexico's presence is so great in this country. It is certainly that way in Texas and parts of the southern part of the United States. In Chicago, there's a very strong Mexican-American presence there. In our part of the country, Michelle is sitting right across from me. She's going to say hello in a second or two. We have many people who are from Puerto Rico, which is a part of the country. It's one of our, it's a part of the United States, so they are definitely U.S. citizens, but they are of Hispanic descent. The Dominican Republic, which I read off a little while ago, very strongly represented here in the greater Boston area, certainly in the metro Boston area, and it goes all the way down to New York as well. So that is a little landscape as I just crisscross the country and just talk about immigration issues. We're going to come back again and again talking about immigration issues, giving you the statistics, the information that you need to know. We'll talk also about entrepreneurship as well. And you'll have the facts and the figures so that you can refute some of the rhetoric that's out there. So often you can repeat information that is incorrect, and that's not a good thing. But we're going to turn the tide now and take you into my space with my family members. And I have relatives now calling in from Detroit, Michigan. They're on the line right now, and I'm so excited that they are here. I'm going to just bring them on, and we welcome my sister-in-law, my brother, my niece, my soon-to-be nephew on to Focus on Empowerment. Hello and welcome to the show. Hello.
Hi, Carol. This is Wilson.
And Debbie.
Hey, Wilson. Hey, Debbie. How are both of you?
Fine. We're doing fine. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Well, you know, my show always will take you in a different direction. I'm sitting up here on the turnpike in the rest area. I thought that I would have made it to Jerome and Lorna's house in time to broadcast the show, but the traffic got horrendous, absolutely horrendous. So we took a detour, and we've been talking to some of the people who are here in the rest area. It's like a United Nations almost. And so we've had a lot of fun, and I have people in the chat room right now who are listening. So tell us what's going on in the Copeland household in Michigan.
Well, our daughter Lauren is home from New York, and she is, in fact, on her way to the airport to pick up her, I never get this correct, her fiancé or her fiance, which is it, Debbie?
Fiance, I believe.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So we are looking forward to Rob coming in to spend the holiday with us. And
that's exciting.
Friends coming over, including our godson is coming up from Toledo. And so it'll be a nice, traditional, egregiously overeaten holiday.
That's fun. Now, in the Copeland household, I mean, you talk about a spread. I just know it's going to be, and I've been at your table. It is a beautiful spread. Are you co-cooking Wilson and Debbie, or is one in charge of one particular a meal item, or how is the division of labor handled in your household?
At Thanksgiving, I am the bartender and host. other than that, all items to be consumed are prepared by Debbie.
Oh, all right. And Debbie, walk us through your meal. Tell us what's on the stove cooking right now.
We have a turkey and dressing and sweet potatoes. Lauren did make macaroni and cheese. We have greens, chitlins, and scalloped oysters.
Ooh,
we run the gamut.
Yum.
Scalloped oysters to chitterlings. Let you know that we can cover the waterfront here in this household.
That's great. And for some of my listeners, because I have people in the chat room probably wondering, what are chitlings? Well, you have to be a black person to understand that. That is a real delicacy. Well, but tell us, what are chitlings? Or Wilson?
Carol,
yes.
I would
yes.
like to correct you on one thing. You do
okay.
not have to be black to eat chitterlings. 40
That's
years
right.
ago, when I was in school in Nashville, I was listening to the Porter Wagoner show with his co-host, then the unfamous Dolly Parton. And Jerry Reed was on, and they asked him, do you eat chitterlings? And 40 years ago, I heard Jerry Reed say, I eat them boiled, stewed, steamed, and fried, creek slung, and stump whooped. This is not an ethnic dish.
Oh, that's pretty good. So anyone can enjoy them.
That's right.
You know, Wilson, you bring back memories now. Now, you and I both can remember when Mother was sitting at the kitchen sink on her stool with the radio on, cleaning chitlins. Remember those days?
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I don't really eat them. I mean, you guys, you keep up the tradition, but I can remember her sitting up there. I can remember coming into the kitchen, and you have to clean chitlins really well in order to get all that stuff out, and I'm sure you've probably been cleaning them for hours, Debbie. Is that right? Just like Mother did and your mom?
I used to clean them. Now I buy them, clean. That's, you know, that I can't do that anymore. We wouldn't eat them if I had to clean them. So I buy them clean and sort of go over them and give them an extra little pull and rinsing. But, I found a reputable place and I go with it.
Huh, that's all right. That's
mm-hmm.
okay. And how long? So does it mean you
have
to cook them
a little longer?
It's worth
it. Hmm?
It's worth it, I bet, because otherwise you'd be in front of your kitchen sink cleaning them for hours.
That's right.
So you have a pressure cooker, and you put them in the pressure cooker and cook them
for a couple of hours? No, I've never used a pressure cooker. I just put them in a pot with onion, jalapeno pepper, seasonings, and let them go.
All right.
Yeah, you sort of slow cook them, but they're good.
That's great. And Wilson, any delicacy that you're working on in terms of your bartending skills? For today?
I beg your pardon?
Any particular drink of the season
that
you're working on?
These are adult people over here, so nothing foo-foo. It'll be martini and probably a few Jack Daniels drinkers.
Boy
drinks. These are real real cocktailers here.
I gotcha. Well, you've got a big year coming up, both of you do, with your daughter, Lauren, my niece getting married. What are you thankful for when you look at what's past, what you have now, and what's in front of you? Wilson, what are you thankful for?
Being here.
Pardon me?
Being here.
Being here. I like that. And Debbie, what about you?
of good health. We've had our challenges, so we're thankful for good health. Always glad to have Lauren here with us. It just feels like Wilson always says everything's in place when she's home. So,
that's wonderful. Well, I know your table is going to be elegant and beautiful, and food is going to be delicious, and you'll have lots of friends. Now, your friends will stop by, and I know you also have a big open house for Christmas, too, that takes place where you have countless people who stop by and bring cheer and good wishes to you. So this is the kickoff for the holiday season in the Copeland household, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, people, it's not like Christmas night. So people get sort of full at Thanksgiving and usually sort of have a good dinner and head on in. So we'll have a few people maybe drop by, but nothing like Christmas night.
Great. That's great. Well, you know, I've brought on the line now, we have the Connecticut part of my family now, and we're so happy that the Farquharsons are now on the line. I thought I was going to broadcast from the Farquharsons' house, but, you know, things work out the way they do, and we're here at the rest area. We've actually had people from the rest area on the show earlier. Lorna and Jerome, are you on the line, or is this Velma?
We have the whole crew here online. I'll have everyone say hello, including the kids.
All right.
Ready?
Oh, great.
Hello. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Everyone says happy Thanksgiving.
Super. Happy Thanksgiving. And Lorna, we'll see you soon. Now, Wilson and Debbie are on the line. Do you want to say hello to them?
Hi, Uncle Wilson. Hi, Aunt Debbie. Happy
Thanksgiving. Hi, Lorna. How are you? Happy Thanksgiving to you and everyone else.
Thank you. Same to you.
What time are you serving dinner, Lorna?
I was just about to say, Uncle Wilson, I'm calling on time. We're going to be serving dinner probably between 3 and 4 o'clock.
All right. Well, we're going to get off the phone.
All right.
It's been a pleasure talking to everybody. Hi, Jerome.
Jerome, Uncle Wilson says hi.
Hey, Mr. Wilson.
He says, hey, Mr. Wilson.
Okay. You all take care. Carol, I hope you have a safe rest of your trip.
Thank you. Yeah, all right, Wilson
safely.
And Debbie Copeland, thank you so much from Detroit. My peace from Detroit.
Tell Michelle happy Thanksgiving. We haven't heard from her.
Oh, here's Michelle right here. She's going to say hi to you.
Hi, happy Thanksgiving.
Hello. Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Michelle.
Michelle, you take care.
Yes.
I'm gonna hang up with a goodbye and a hug to you, okay?
Okay, bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
That's my driver. She keeps me on track. So, Wilson and Debbie, we wish you the very best. And Jerome and Lorna, we'll see you soon. Thank you so much for being guests on my program.
Of course, and thank you for having us. And we wish you traveling mercies, and we look forward to seeing you. And everyone here would like to say goodbye and happy Thanksgiving.
Goodbye.
All right, put them on.
This is Holly up on that hair.
All right. Thank you so much. What a lot of fun. Take care now. All right.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you soon. All right.
Love
bye-bye.
You.
Love you. Well, that's my family in Michigan and Connecticut. You heard them all. And that's what family is all about. That's what Thanksgiving is all about. We reflect now on what took place years ago, a couple of centuries ago, and things haven't really changed that much when you think about the importance of family and getting together and just saying thank you. Just saying thank you is just so, so important. I think I'd like to put a little tribute music on as we close out our show, and then I'll have some closing remarks for you after the tribute music. Now, we've talked about all the up things and all of the happy times when we reflect on Thanksgiving, but I know that there may be some people out there where this is a difficult holiday for you, that you don't have people shouting out, as my family has done on the telephone and those who have done in Michigan. You know, maybe it's a tough holiday. You're sitting alone and you have friends that are taking care of their family responsibilities, but you know, maybe you've got some financial circumstances or some health issues or something that is just really stressful in your life. And I'm just hoping that whatever your circumstances circumstances happen to be, that you will put one foot in front of the other, or you will just take a deep breath and just move forward. Tough years. A tough, tough time for lots of people. In the United States, our unemployment rate is about 10%. It's probably closer to 15 or 17%. In other parts of the country, you can drill down and look at some ethnic groups, and unemployment rate can be even higher. We don't know when the recession is officially going to end, even though it was declared ended a year ago. For a lot of people, if you don't have a job, the recession is still here. I can just make a list now of people who I know, friends who I know, who have just lost a job. I have colleagues, I have people that I used to do business with who no longer are working for their companies. I have those who are struggling with mortgage payments, those who are trying to figure out how to pay the rent, those who are just trying to figure out how to smile in front of those that really just want to cry. So there's no shortage of issues and difficulties and circumstances that just play themselves out. But I'm just hoping that somehow you will find the strength, and you will find the encouragement, and you will certainly find the way that you will become empowered to move forward and move in your life in a way that's going to be meaningful for you and your entire family. You know, I'm a true believer now that the litmus test for leadership is not when things are going well. The litmus test for leadership are when things are going badly, when things just don't work out for you, or when you can find any corner that you look and there's a problem or there are difficulties. I'm just hoping that no matter what your circumstances, no matter what happens in your life, what has happened in your life, you will realize that, A, there are some things we can never control. There are some things that are completely out of our control. But what little things we can control, and a lot of that has to do with our attitude about things, that we can approach things with a lot of courage and conviction. We can fortify our resources as need be, studying up on the issues. We can do things in a way that will matter. And that we will approach every single day as a gift that we need to be thankful for, as a gift that is not promised to any of us. There are people driving down the roads right now. There was an accident, or actually on the other side of the road, and before we pulled off the road, stirred up traffic, and it looked like kind of a serious one, and we certainly said a quick prayer for that individual, hoping that they were able to get out of their car and move forward. There's just a lot of opportunities for disaster and tragedy just to completely fold us. But if you have a lot of inner strength, and certainly if you have the faith that I hope to have, then you'll be able to work through those difficulties, those problems, those obstacles. You'll be able to move forward, and you'll be able to sit down and say thanks for whatever you have. There are those who are incarcerated, those who are in hospital beds, those who are in oxygen tents, those who are infirm, those who are struggling just trying to make it. But even in those circumstances, there's got to be a shred of something that you can be thankful for. On this day, on this Thanksgiving, as we look and as we gather together with family members, as you've heard my family members speak today, as we talk about that very first Thanksgiving in the United States, as we look at the difficult days ahead, but the days that also provide a lot of promise and opportunity, we're hoping that we'll gather the strength and the courage to move forward, that you will have an opportunity to just take a deep breath, surmise your circumstances, and either physically or literally put one foot in front of the other and move forward, knowing that somehow, some way, you'll be able to resolve the issues that you're facing. We hope that those who are embarking upon new lives together, those who are getting married, and my niece and almost nephew-to-be, that those who are in school embarking upon new careers, those who will be embarking upon new careers, those who are young and energetic, they will always realize that life is a gift. Nothing is promised to us, and that it's really up to us to have the perseverance and the stamina and the courage to say thank you and to always realize that things are there for the asking and for the taking, if in fact it's there for us at all. We wish each and every one of you the very best this Thanksgiving Day, and we hope that you will enjoy your life as it rolls out. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program, and we'll talk to you next week. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you next week.